But yeah, when you get a chance, it's not very long. It's awesome.
Yeah, well, I enjoy his stuff already. So
I did watch Half Baked again the other night.
I want to go back and rewatch the Chappelle Show because that was so.
I got those DVDs at home too. So
is it one of the one
groundbreaking
of the,
stuff?
One of the skits he's talking about is like how he's like, you know, there's this department of like standards and practices in TV where if you're making a regular show, they hardly ever, you ever talk, but if you're making Chappelle Show, you see them all the time. It's pretty funny because he's just like, you know, most people don't see these people, but I'm pretty much in a daily meeting.
You know, John Mulaney was talking about that group of people that kind of monitor what's going on with television shows, and he was doing a stand-up bit for, I want to say it was a Tonight Show, and in the bit he was doing a joke about midgets. And they came and told him and said, no, you can't do that. They actually, he goes on to this bit. It's hilarious. He talks about how the person told him saying the word midget is as bad as saying the N-word. And he goes, no, it's not. Because you're saying midget, but you're not even saying the other word. He said, the other guy goes, well, would you really like to see a whole bunch of midgets outside protesting? And Tom Lenny said, yeah, actually, that would be pretty awesome if we could arrange that. Tom Mulaney's so funny, dude. That's he's never caught a stand-up. You got to check him out. He's hilarious.
All right. Well, let's start off the day with happy birthday to my sister Chrissy on the 19th here, Thursday.
Happy birthday.
September is a...
Amy's birthday is the 19th as well.
Happy birthday, Amy. Yeah, September is a big month for us. My mom's birthday was last week. My sister's birthday is this week. My birthday is next week. Mm-hmm. It's just... So, episode 147, 16th of September. I can't believe. It's like years go by faster whenever you're doing a bi-weekly, you know, a weekly podcast.
Right.
Because you're like, wow, it's already this. It's insanity. But in this one and next one, we're going to talk about this monster we've been building. This sort of Frankenstein that's been kind of pieced together from all kinds of different things that has started to wake up and take
blown up this year. Yes.
So we'll get into that in a second. But first,
the old business.
All right. On this date in 1620, the pilgrims set sail on the Mayflower, heading this way.
Big news.
Had to sail up and down the coast till they found a rock that said Plymouth on it so they could step off of it. On this date in 1908, General Motors is founded. That's a crazy story of like industrialization and just like blowing up and then like going into the 80s and wah, wah, wah. We'll never have to worry about those little Japanese things.
Reminds me of that movie with Michael Keaton. Was it Michael Keaton in that movie where he...
Gung-Ho?
Yeah, Gung-Ho, that's it.
Yep. All right, this date in 1920, in a story of the more things change, the more they stay the same. This is 1920, the Wall Street bombing. A bomb in a horse wagon explodes in front of the J.P. Morgan building, killing 38 and wounding 400 people. And when I clicked on this, yeah, you can, if you go to the J.P. Morgan building, you can see where the concrete's been damaged. They didn't ever fix it.
Okay.
It's got like shrapnel holes and stuff in it.
Oh, wow.
In 1955, a Zulu class sub becomes the first to launch a ballistic missile. So that was good.
Yeah.
We needed that in the world. This date in 1959, the first photocopier, the Xerox 914, is introduced. Shortly after, somebody Xeroxed their ass.
I remember when I first got on with Halliburton, I caught my boss's sons doing that on the weekend in the office.
Yeah, in the world of like high-end home printers and Bluetooth, you know, everybody's got a pretty much home copier. Nobody really thinks about, like, remember all the faces?
Yeah.
like all this stuff that people would Xerox, you'd get pissed at somebody and Xerox your ass, or you'd Xerox a black sheet of paper to like make the toner go out.
Yeah.
So, you know, mess with your boss.
Now, what's funny is that weekend that happened, it was on a Saturday, just a few of us had to come in early to come in on the weekend to do some work and stuff. But even at that time, you know, this wasn't that long ago, we were allowed to smoke in the office. People had ashtrays on their desk and everything, which, you know, when you think of that, you think that's a long time ago.
Yeah.
This was in the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't that long ago.
Yeah, I remember there was like a little comic convention in Memorial City Mall in, you know, early 90s. You know, I was in maybe junior high or high school. Which I guess now that's like 30 years ago, but still.
Yeah. It doesn't feel like it was that long ago.
But. Yeah, it really doesn't, but still. It was like some dude was smoking a pipe, and the smoke was so noxious that, like, people were getting turned off by it and stuff. And, like, I still remember that. He wasn't, like he wasn't being a jerk. He was just over there doing his thing.
Right.
But it was like, oh, man, that's a stinky leaf over there. All right, let's see. This is kind of cool. 1961... United States National Hurricane Research Project drops 8 cylinders of silver iodide into the eye of a Hurricane Esther. The wind speed declines by 10% and then begins Project Storm Fury. Now that would be something to put on a resume.
Right.
Or like you're at a bar, like, hey, so what do you do? Like, I work for Storm Fury. Think about like the Avengers or something. But I clicked on this, and what the hypothesis was that if you added silver iodide to the supercooled water at the top of a hurricane, that it would freeze.
Yeah.
And then the hurricane would become structurally unsound and fall apart.
Uh-huh.
And so they did this thing for like 20 years, like they were seeding hurricanes to try to knock them down.
Try to knock them down.
But then it turned out that it was kind of just like the control group, the hurricane would just do that anyway.
Right.
The silver iodide didn't really have much of an effect, so seeding the hurricane didn't really change anything. But it did add a lot of, like, so basically all of our tracking, like the way that hurricanes act based on the atmospheric conditions around them and water temperatures and air temperatures, and Project Storm Fury basically gave the research into that. So now whenever you see National Weather Service, like, oh, it's going to go this way, and they're mostly right, it's because of Storm Fury.
Okay.
Pretty cool.
It's a very timely one, too, considering the controversy behind tracking of a Hurricane Dorian this particular week.
Dude, that one's bizarre. That one went straight up the coast. Like,
but what's funny is just with the whole
Sharpie thing. Yeah.
It's funny.
I honestly, like, those are articles I don't even click on. I'm like, I don't care. Right. I don't care. I certainly don't care that a dude with a Sharpie on a map, like, drew a circle in, you know, this direction instead of that, and they're like, collusion! What? Like, this is, I don't know. Like, it's not worth clicking. Like, it's stupid. Like, let's put him in jail for that. All right. They made a movie about this. I remember 1979. I don't remember it in 1979 because I was only 4.
Right.
But, 8 people escaped from East Germany to the West in a homemade hot air balloon.
It's pretty awesome, dude.
I mean, how do you get the hot air into the balloon, like, in that scale without being noticed?
Right.
I mean, there was a movie about how, like, they sewed all their quilts together and stuff, and, like...
Yeah. Got a fan, and...
they got it up.
Burning stove.
Like, yeah. All right. Notable births. We, talked about him a couple weeks ago, Mr. H.A. Ray, guy who wrote Curious George.
Yeah.
1925, B.B. King.
Awesome, awesome musician.
1927, Columbo, Peter Falk.
Wild eye.
1952, Mickey Rourke.
I used to like Mickey Rourke a lot. He was in some good movies.
He was.
Really, really great movies.
Got his face beat in.
Yeah.
Pretty rough.
My favorite part that he played, of course, I'm a huge Charles Bukowski fan, and he was in the movie Barfly, which is kind of the not totally true to life autobiography of one, Charles Bukowski, yeah. which was awesome. He did a great job portraying him too. I got a bunch of rare interviews and different things with Charles Bukowski, and he played the part very, very well.
Bukowski, I read a lot of his stuff.
Yeah,
and I was at a pretty low point in my life at that point too, so I could really, really, yeah. really
same here, man.
Identify with that dude, but. Yeah, I mean, he makes you want to, like, it's like, if you got Bukowski, Tom Waits, and a bottle of whiskey, you might not, you're not going to work tomorrow. Or you go in hungover and write awesome poetry like Bukowski did. Because about half of his poetry is drunk, and the other half is hungover.
Yeah.
like I'm amazing writer, though.
Oh, yeah.
So good. Yeah. 1956 magician David Copperfield. He was another one big in the 80s.
He was huge, yeah.
I made the Statue of Liberty disappear. It's like, cool. It's not as big as it looks in the movies, but it's still pretty big.
Right.
1958, Jennifer Tilly. She's the only reason to watch Child's Play, really. She's amazing.
She still does cameos and stuff in the sequels that have come out
yeah.
since then. This past one, she was in it also. So, ooh, Tiffany.
Yep. No, I mean, I've always liked her. She's yeah. in like a lot of stuff she's been in, not just Child's Play, yeah. but she's hilarious.
I listen to her podcast too. She has a podcast on ladies in horror. So,
oh, cool.
Yep.
And in 1960, Mike Mignola, guy who created Hellboy.
Yeah.
Among others. But
very yeah. distinctive artistic style. I like him.
I think he drew the Batman Year One too.
Yeah. Yeah,
a lot of those storylines that have become pretty much the canon for mm-hmm. you know Mignola, Miller, Batman in that
yeah.
like late 80s. Good stuff. All right, that's it for the old business. We'll take a break and come back with a new.
Mr. Gomez.
New business is new business, and this is new business.
You know, we talk about people using odd service animals and motion support animals and stuff like that every once in a while. Well, everybody knew this was coming because of a lot of the airlines had already started appending their policies regarding these animals and stuff. But American Airlines flight recently, some photographs were snapped of someone who had their miniature horse service animal on the plane. Now, this isn't an emotional support animal. This is actually a service animal. So it's not just some guy that's afraid to fly and that wants to bring his horse with him or wants to bring a pet with him. This guy actually uses the miniature horse for a reason, but the pictures are pretty funny of the guy sitting there taking up pretty much the front of two seats with his little pony. There's another one there. There's a picture of the horse with his vest on. Yeah, could you imagine getting on a flight and there's somebody on there with a...
Have you ever been around a horse for any period of time?
Yeah. They're going to plop eventually.
Yeah.
And apparently it was a smaller airport, so they didn't have huge planes. It was a smaller plane, and it was... You know, I would think they would have made him get two seats because pretty much the person next to him is all squished up because the back of the horse's ass in is right there on his knees and stuff. But yeah, so we're coming to those times where...
I think there's going to be a big backlash on that.
Yeah, I can see that definitely happen.
Like, this is discrimination. It's like, nope, no, it's not.
Yeah.
You just take a train.
And as you know, the big news in horror for this past weekend is the release of It Chapter 2 premiering in theaters, which I've heard mixed reviews about. Some people are saying that it's, you know, equal to the first one. Other folks are saying it's good, but it's not as good as the first one. It's not, I've heard reviews, people saying that the fact that there was so much laughter during the movie shows that it wasn't nearly at the level of the first one. I'm still going to see it. You know, I never watch movies on the first weekend that they're released. I always wait a little bit before I go see them, so I haven't seen it yet. But down in Australia, a parents group has gone to complain because they say the It Chapter 2 billboard has been giving their children nightmares. Huge posters for the movie featuring Pennywise the Clown appear on roadsides in the city, and there are now calls for them to be banned. One mother said it just totally freaks her kids out. Her daughter Piper added, "I get really scared because it's hard to go to bed when you have a scary picture in your mind. Before I go to bed, I have to check the whole room, and when I finally go to bed, I will wake up after a nightmare." So just the posters are giving these kids nightmares, and I blame the parents.
Yep.
You know, you kind of got to...
Do you remember that cartoon, The Far Side?
Yeah.
Remember when he's like, "You better go to bed early, or the floating floating ghost of death will visit you," and he's got a balloon tied so that he can like coil it out and like post it out his window. Like, that's good parenting right there.
What's the matter? You know, just like with my kids and just me as a child, you know, I let my kids watch scary movies when they were young to make sure they realize that there's a difference between fantasy and reality. You know,
right.
You have to ground the kids properly to where a billboard or a poster on the side of the road doesn't cause them nightmares. But they actually complained to the Australian Advertising Watchdog, which would be the Australian version of Standards and Practices, says that she was told that they have no jurisdiction over placement or timing of advertisements except when considering the use of language, sex, sexuality, nudity, and that's it. They can't...
So you know that whenever Night of the Living Dead came out, it was rated G for general audiences. We talked about the MPAA on a previous episode. But can you imagine like getting dropped off to a double feature and seeing Night of the Living Dead, like you're like six? And so like that was the thing. I read the review. Roger Ebert's review of Night of the Living Dead is not really a review of Night of the Living Dead. It's a description of the crowd reactions of all these little children watching all of this horrible stuff happen on TV. And that's what gave rise to the ratings board. I'm like, man, you think a picture of a clown on a billboard is scary? Go back in time a little bit.
Right.
See what some real men saw.
Now, this was not the first time a clown-based horror movie poster has been reported to that particular board, even though I hate to bring this particular remake up, but the 2015 remake of The Poltergeist featured posters with the doll from Poltergeist, which we recently talked about. And that one also, they had more than 70 complaints about that one. Their statement at that time was, "Although we acknowledge that some distress had been caused because we did not consider that the overall impression of the ads was such that they were likely to cause excessive fear or distress, particularly in the context of an ad for a horror film." It's a horror film. We concluded that they were not irresponsibly targeted in outdoor media. So they pretty much said, "Toughen up your kids, please."
That's good.
Now let's stay in the land down under for a second. Sure, you heard this story already because it's been all over the place, but an Australian vegan named Cilla Carton, who lives in Perth, has been in a court battle with her neighbor since 2018 because she claims the smell of their barbecued meat and fish has become so overwhelming she can't be in her backyard anymore. So, group of folks. She also said her neighbor's cigarette smoke would go into her yard and she can't stand the sound of children playing their basketball near her home. So in response, the community has set up a Facebook event that has, as of right now, thousands of people are going to attend a barbecue set up outside her home, outside of her front yard, to where they're just going to have a huge block party barbecuing all kinds of meat. The event is being called "Put Some Pork on Your Fork." They said, "Don't let Cilla destroy a good old Aussie tradition. Join us for a community barbecue in protest of her actions. And help Cilla Garden get some pork on her fork." So yeah, they're planning on subjugating this poor woman to dozens of barbecues going on at the same time.
That's a good thing too. in our neighborhood, we have this person. The kind of people that have nothing nice to say about anything ever.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, I know the type.
Well, we have one of those. And so it's like, in the neighborhood group, somebody would post a picture of a lost dog. Like, hey, somebody's dog got out. Does anybody know who this is? And all of her comments were like, talking like irresponsible dog owners and blah, blah, blah. You know, it's like, you shouldn't have a dog if you can't keep it in your yard. And it's like, dude, they get out sometimes.
Yeah, yeah, shit happens.
Like, that's what dogs do, is they get out. And a watchful, caring neighbor is the one who will be like, yo, your dog's out. You know, I caught him for you. Like, that's what you want in neighbors. Anything that would happen was just negative, 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 negative. Till finally, like, every time she'd comment on something, somebody would respond, like, anybody in the neighborhood would respond, like, dude, shut up. Like, like, really? Like, this is really what you, like, we had that big hailstorm.
Uh-huh.
It came out of nowhere. People had their cars in the driveway and got pelted. Like, right. I have some friends, like, their headlights, their windshields got broken out. Like, it was like machine gun. It was, like bigger than a golf ball.
Right.
It was, like, right over our neighborhood. Like, out of the entire city, it was, like, right here. Just, like, like, people's back windows were getting broken and stuff. And her comment on the post, people the next day were like, oh, man, look what happened to my car. She's like, yeah, it's pretty crappy that you have, like, you know, you probably have, like, $500 worth of junk in your garage that you're housing rather than keeping your car in there.
Right.
So it's just one of those, like, everybody, like, now anytime she says anything, it's like Dr. Evil. Zip it. So even if she wants to say something nice, that's what happens whenever you are a shitty neighbor.
Okay, we talked about hurricanes a little while ago, and Hurricane Dorian in particular, that has already destroyed the Bahamas. It just absolute decimation world. Story out of Murphytown on the island of Baco, down in the Bahamas, a gentleman named Adrian Farrington. He was trying frantically to save his son from predators that were in the flood waters. This is pretty crazy. His five-year-old son, Adrian, was reaching up and calling out daddy as the winds blew him away as they were trying to get to higher ground from the floodwaters. And that's when he noticed there were sharks actually swimming in the floodwaters around where they were, kind of circling and stuff. So the 38-year-old jumped in the water. He grabbed his son, threw him on the roof from the water to get him away from the sharks, and then realized that he was having trouble getting up at that point too, but he was able to get up. But yeah, there were actually sharks swimming through the floodwaters of Hurricane Dorian, which is pretty damn crazy.
Yeah.
It's just a scary situation all.
Something like that movie, Crawl, which was
out. Yeah, yeah, it's like the Bahamas version of Crawl, yeah.
Can you imagine you, like, went and saw that movie, you're like, damn, that's crazy, that would never happen, and then you're living it, like, just a couple months later. Like, it could happen. I'm not laughing at that. You have to laugh in that kind of uncomfortably, like, that was messed up sort of way.
Right, right.
Wow.
Yeah, that was a pretty crazy story that I saw. Okay, and finally, to end it on a much, much lighter note, we have a new Will Greenlee out.
Nice.
Right now. So, the attention-grabbing headline reads, "She grabbed beers and Stone Cold Steve Austin'd him." You gotta love Will Greenlee. A woman was arrested after a man says she got a couple of beers and did a Stone Cold Steve Austin to him, according to an affidavit. And that's exactly how it reads in the police report. Van also got locked up after St. Lucie County Sheriff's investigators say he got in a physical confrontation with them. Now, he called the cops to have them come and take care of the woman that was assaulting him. And then he decided to
beat up the cops.
Threaten the cops by boasting of jiu-jitsu training and attacking the cops. Okay, so the 23-year-old woman was arrested on a battery charge. 26-year-old man was arrested on charges of battery of an officer, resisting an officer with violence after the August 17th fracas on Winter Garden Parkway. So sheriff's investigators went there following a domestic disturbance call. When they got there, they found the man pinning the woman down in the garage. He wound up getting off her before deputies said he got in a physical altercation with them. It took three deputies and pepper spray to get the man into custody. The man told deputies he argued with the woman and she threw her phone at him, striking him in the throat. He said she followed him and took two beer cans and stone cold Austin my backside, according to the affidavit. Austin is a widely famous former professional wrestler who retired in 2003. Described on the WWE website as the blue collar warrior for the common man. His ring name was Stone Cold Steve Austin. Clad in jeans and black leather, often soaked in beer foam, Austin was defiant, brash, and dared anyone to try and tell him what to do. An online profile states Austin was beloved by the universe and that if you hate him, you are un-American. Austin had a number of signature moves, and it is not clear whether the woman is accused of using any of them in the incident. So let's get back to the story now. The man said the woman went crazy, which forced him to pin her down until law enforcement officials arrived. Investigators reported the man boasted he was trained in jiu-jitsu, a martial art. It is not clear whether Austin knows jiu-jitsu. That's how the story ends.
That would have made the story so much more interesting if we would have known just that one little factoid.
It is not clear if Austin knows jiu-jitsu.
Oh, man.
And that's the Will Greenlee for this week.
All right, then.
That's it.
All right, I'll take a break. Come back.
Want to go psycho with me, Elvira, here at the Bates Motel? Look for me wherever they sell mug root beer. And enter the Go Psycho with Elvira contest. You can be my guest at Universal Studios in Hollywood for a monstrous bash at the Bates Motel. Shower anyone? This Halloween, go psycho with Elvira and win a party with mug root beer and me.
I love my mug.
I love it.
Don't be scared. I'm the super sweet monster with the super sweet new cereal, Count Chocula.
Piffle, here's the super sweet new cereal, Frankenberry.
But I've got chocolate sweeties for monstrous chocolate flavor.
Well, I've got berry-flavored sweeties for monstrous strawberry flavor.
Count Chocula.
Frankenberry.
Hi.
Frankenberry.
Count Chocula.
And we're back, and let's talk about, well, you want to start at the beginning, part one, part two, and then part three, or do you want to back up a little bit? Let's
take the floor.
So we started this thing, 2017, was like, Scott and I were talking, like, hey man, we should do a thing. And neither one of us had any money, we had experience, but we didn't have experience using anybody but somebody else's money.
Yeah.
Like, we were working in shows and conventions that had already been built. We needed to build one for ourselves, so where do you start? You start with space. So walked into a hotel and was like, hey, how much is that room? It wasn't too terribly out of bounds, which come to find out it kind of was. It was a little expensive for what we were needing it for, but regardless, at the time it seemed fine. And by the end of it, instead of that one room, we ended up with all of the rooms and the hallway, and it just... So we should have known from day one that, you know, there was a strong desire for this sort of thing going on in Houston. Well, then we got hit by Hurricane Harvey, and so it knocked out everybody's disposable incomes all throughout the city. And so...
And time also.
Yeah. I mean, people were still mucking out houses. Yeah. So, you know, we did all right. We broke even. We had a nice little... bunch of folks through, and it was a nice little vendor show, and gave us enough of a boost to we'd go ahead and do year two.
Yep. Once we got with all the vendors, they were all happy with the way the show went. We knew that we could, you know, take a second chance and see what happened.
So then year two, we booked in a hotel, and then after we booked it, then they started reconstruction, and we were promised that reconstruction would be done, the renovations would be done long before our show, and... We checked and checked and checked, and yes, yes, yes. And then about 2 weeks before, where we had already done all of our advertising and there's nothing we can do, they started a whole new bunch of construction. It wasn't even like the stuff that they had already started was done.
They moved on to phase two.
They moved on to like phase two and three without having fixed phase one.
Right.
So our convention space looked like the Twilight Zone ride from Disney World.
And it was actually construction going on during the show.
Yes. So there was a lot of stuff that we could not control, that we ended up going back and negotiating refunds for. Well, I negotiated a refund for ourselves, and then I distributed the refund amongst our vendors, who were obviously... But everybody still seemed happy. I mean, we still had a pretty decent flow through. It was all right.
It was a great part.
Especially because they closed the freeways in two directions. Like you couldn't get there if you were coming from the east or from the south. Like you could only get there from the north or the west.
Right.
Like, there was no other way. So that was not good. Probably should have taken that as a sign, but we persevered, and now we're back for year three. So we've got a much better hotel and a much better spot, and it's all put together. And all of the freeways are newly built, so there shouldn't be any construction closures. And as of now, as of my last meeting over there, all of the rooms were put together.
Awesome.
So we're good. We've got a big vendor exhibition space downstairs. We've got four breakout panel rooms upstairs. We have got some of the... Well, I'm going to say some of the best. I think we've got all of the best local authors on the indie side, filmmakers, haunters, home haunters, bloggers, podcasters, and cosplayers that in the city. I mean, we've been recruiting them for months,
yeah.
And we've been vetting them out. And we've got some folks that are, if you just look at their pages, the stuff that they do is just incredible.
Yeah.
Lifelike makeup. Body paints, the killer clowns, the haunted houses, all of that stuff. And we decided to take it a little bit in a different direction, right? So a lot of times your panel shows, your discussion panels, it's a creator talking about his or her creation. But we've actually, especially on the filmmaker side and on the haunter side, has made it the creator talking about the creative process.
It's going to be workshops for you to learn how to do what they do, what they love, and what they're passionate about.
Right. And what's great is so many of the folks that I approached early on was like, hey, would you be interested in doing a panel? And they're kind of like, I don't really know what I would talk about. I'd be like, how about a workshop where you're doing a show and tell? Like this is where you take a process from beginning to end. They're like, yeah, I'll do that. I'll certainly teach. I'll certainly show,
yeah.
Tell, and demonstrate. I don't want to just sit there for an hour talking about stuff.
Yeah.
So I know you've got the panel schedule. If you want to like just peel off just a few highlights, because we're going to do this in two shows and there's so much stuff going on.
Well, of course, you know, we've always been strong on the literary side of horror, so those we've got some great panels in that aspect. We're gonna have a stroll through the history of horror with Jay and Jessica. We're gonna have a workshop on deconstructing Stephen King's It. They're just gonna talk about all the symbolism, the structure, the way it comes to you, and what makes it so effective as a novel. We're gonna have a panel on Sex and Horror by Chantel Renee and Dicey Grenoir. And to me, one of the most exciting parts about a Saturday with the literary panel is the open mic panel that we're going to be having with Jay and Jessica, where these authors that, you know, like I said, all of our guests are passionate about what they do. That's why they do it. They're going to have an opportunity to actually give you an example of what they write by reading their stories to you.
Yeah, like reading excerpts of their novels, their short stories, or even some of their flash fiction.
Right.
So you might get an entire story, you might get a chapter, you might get an excerpt of their work, but you get to see, instead of just like, oh, hey, look, you know, there's a book that I may or may not read, you get to see an author actually perform a piece of their work, which is amazing.
And then on Sunday, continuing with our literary panels, we're going to have a panel on horror and science fiction by Clancy Weeks, who he actually also placed in our short story contest that we had. A panel on women in horror and one on zombies by Jessica Rainey, which is going to be pretty cool. She's great.
Yes.
She is great. And that takes us to our filmmakers. Now, our filmmaker panels, if you're interested in learning how to make independent film and you want to make your own movies, our show is going to be the place for you to be that weekend. I mean, it's a full two-day workshop on filmmaking. We're going to start off Saturday with Tony and Troy from the Houston Horror Film Festival. They're going to be talking about the Houston Horror Film Fest, let you know what's happening, and Troy will probably go through some of his stuff as far as what he's passionate about, which is filmmaking. He's great to talk to. He makes you want to go and make a film. You know, it's pretty awesome.
When I told you, we had them on a couple weeks ago, episode 144, and Troy mentioned a couple of his movies and how he just liked, you know. Well, I went home that night and I looked up Party Night. Mm-hmm. I often watch a lot, especially this ultra low budget independent films. I always kind of watch them with, whereas we kind of look at fresh eyes. It's like, oh, okay, well, you see Meatballs, you see Ghostbusters in there, right?
Right.
You because you're familiar with Ghostbusters, you're familiar with Reitman, you're familiar with Murray. You can see Ghostbusters kind of being born in Meatballs, but those are obviously mainstream films with big name stars and a lot of budgets on both ends of it. With these ultra low budgets, I always look and be like, okay, story wise, you know, layout wise, like what would help? What would improve this movie? Like what could make it better? Better writing, better cinematography, whatever. Ultimately, the only thing I could really think of in Party Night was more money.
Yeah.
More money, like probably, you know, camera effects and you know, expanded sets and stuff like that. Because the story as a slasher, it was solid. I mean, it's at least as solid as like Friday the 13th as far right. as like had a couple of really good jump scares and some nice gory special effects. Like he said in the interview, there's not any kind of real motivation for the killer. He just does.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, just, he's not a nice guy. It was a good, solid slasher. I enjoyed it a lot, actually.
Yeah.
So, thinking like this guy, if he had a little bit bigger budget, and probably could buy some more toys, then he could be on his way to being one of these, you know, decent directors.
Yeah.
He's good. So anyway, I wanted to shout out to that because that was a fun movie.
And next on that same day, we're going to have our good friend Joe Grisalfi, who he's currently in Austin right now for the Austin Film Festival, where he's nominated for Best Texas Actor in a Short Film, and also his film Joe Returns Video is nominated for Best Short Film for this year, and he's going to be showing it. It premiered this past Monday.
Somebody showed an excerpt on Facebook, dude. That was hilarious. Have you seen it?
Yeah.
The whole movie?
No, I haven't seen the whole movie.
I
saw the excerpt. But I don't know if you've ever watched his movie Laughing Boy. It's one of the funniest movies I've ever seen. I got the DVD at home. It just cracks me up so much. He breaks the fourth wall the whole time that he's in the movie talking to the camera and stuff.
Sweet.
But Laughing Boy is one of, I tell him all the time, that's actually my favorite movie that he's done. But Joe will be with us, and what I've asked him to give a talk on, because he has several movies on Amazon. He's worked with other streaming services where they've you know, he's had contracts with them, you know, make this many movies so we can have on our streaming service. He's going to talk about independent film distribution, how to get your movie out there, what to expect once it's out there, and he's going to also talk about his catalog, of course, and just the dude loves making film and he's good at it.
Yeah.
And it's funny how, you know, I watch all these independent horror films, I pick up at different conventions and stuff, and every once in a while there pops up Joe Grisalfi. he's everywhere. Everybody knows Joe. Everybody loves Joe. He's going to be joining us once again. And then after that, we're going
to
have...
Well, hold on. This is another thing. Shout out to Joe. If you're in the Jersey Village area of Houston...
Yes, Mr. Pixel.
He just opened an old school arcade called Mr. Pixel that you can go in there and I think, what is it, like $10 for free play?
Yeah.
You can just pay $10 and play old school video games all day long.
And that's another thing he's very
passionate about.
In an
old school arcade. Like, yeah. This isn't one of those. This isn't an arcade bar like they're popping up. This is like an old school video arcade,
yeah.
Which We need those back, man.
Oh, I miss those days. And I remember the my fondest memory is it was, damn, I can't remember. I all of a sudden I can't remember the name of it, but the arcade in my hometown. What they would do is, if you bring your report card, you get 4 tokens for an A, you get 3 tokens for a B, 2 tokens for a C, and I would. You know, at that time, I wasn't, you know, smoking cigarettes and hanging out and drinking and everything. So I would, you know, I had several years where I had like 1 B the entire year. Everything else was A. So I would haul ass to the arcade every time we get a report card. And just so many fond memories of just taking my bike to the arcade and how much fun that was. There's no place like it in the world, man.
Well, you know, me growing up around here, Memorial City Mall had, they had a couple of different arcades in it. They had one at the front end of the mall and one on the back side, Green's Game Room, and then like the Tilt. Mm-hmm. You remember Tilt?
Yeah.
And so they had the helicopter games, you know, the big ones that the smaller arcades couldn't get. So like Gunship and Airwolf and stuff like that. And like I always liked the Fighters and the you know, the Centipedes and Froggers and stuff. I mean, that was all, everybody loved that. But for me, it was like the racing games, like Pole Position.
Yeah.
What was it? The one where you're flying F-14s.
I'm trying to remember the name.
But where the cockpit would move with you.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That was so cool. Like, I remember, and like, those, you know, it was all dark and cold.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You go in there and stay there all day long.
It was Paradise Arcade was the name of the arcade. And I remember it. And I remember stuff like just so vividly. Like, I remember when Dragon Slayer came out, the cartoon video game. Mm-hmm. It wasn't that good of a game, but it was hard. Something. It was new, and the line for that game was just ridiculous. People waiting to play it. So.
The thing about Dragon Slayer is, like, you had to time it just right.
Yeah, timing was everything.
So it's like, and there was like no instructions. So it's like you have a cartoon and it's like do 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 do, and you hit the button and it'd be like, and you're like, wait, yeah, fun, good times. Anyway, yeah, go check out Mr. Pixel.
Okay, so after Joe's panel, we're going to have Jannard Harper, of course, which is a friend of the. The convention. He's going to be giving a talk about. He does a real good workshop where he'll bring his whole crew in. So he'll do a panel on independent filmmaking where you can ask questions. You can talk to the guy that does the sound. You can talk to the guy that does the writing. You can talk to the actors and actresses. You can talk to everybody there that's involved with his movies. And he's probably going to be screening some of Captured. He usually does, you know, a short 15-minute preview of Captured you can watch, and then he is more than happy to help the aspiring young filmmaker. I've sat on his panels before. They are excellent. After that, we're going to have good old Tom Martino and Jeremy Sumrall are going to get together, and they're going to talk about not only independent filmmaking, but Tom Martino is a graduate of the Tom Savini School of Special Effects. He is a custom mask maker. They're going to talk about how to incorporate practical special effects into your film. You know, just how to get that blood splatter right, how to get, you know, things to look the way they're supposed to look. And after that, the rest of the evening for Saturday, we're just going to have screenings of films from our independent filmmaker lineup. Not totally sure which ones we're going to be filming screening yet, but we're going to have plenty for you to check out. And we're going to make sure that we bring you the best of the Houston area horror independent film scene. And on Sunday, Tom Vaughn is going to be there, of course. Mr. Hollywood himself is going to be... He's going to do a workshop on script writing. He's a writer for Hollywood. He, of course, co-wrote The Winchester Story and some other movies. He's going to be there just to talk to you how to put your ideas on paper and get them to where they need to be so you can move forward with making a film. And he's also going to follow that up with a workshop on the business of filmmaking, just to explain to you what all the behind-the-scenes stuff are. You know, how to get your movie noticed, how to get your movie funded, just all that kind of stuff, which is, I can't wait. I'm excited about those panels, to be honest with you. Then following that, we're going to have the guys from Houston Horror Film Festival come back again to talk about their film festival and just kind of revisit the panel they had the day before. And we're going to be ending out Sunday with a workshop on sound and independent film, do's and don'ts. With Kyle Lee and Sergio Leroy, who are two parts of Jannard Harper's cast, they wanted to come in and do an actual workshop on what they specialize in.
Cool.
So just, you know, how to move forward with it. And that's going to be a, it's a filmmaker's workshop, a literary workshop. You know, if you're an aspiring writer or filmmaker, why wouldn't you want to come? You know, you're not going to, this is going to be the best for your budget. I mean, you get the most bang for your buck coming to the Scary Dad Show.
Dude, $15 for Saturday, $10 for Sunday, or a $20 two-day pass.
And so you've got of workshops.
And if you throw down $20, so say you want to come in for all the Saturday programming, there's only one thing you want to see Sunday. It's only $5 more. You can come back and hit up a few panels on Sunday. Right. So like the two-day pass is probably worth it. So yeah, I mean, go online. Tickets are cheap. I mean, we've designed this thing to kind of be self-sustaining with cheap tickets. That's the point. We don't want to overcharge you for access for this stuff. We want to bring this whole dynamic to Houston. And honestly, the focus has kind of changed since we started. We started on kind of a real kind of, I don't know, for lack of a better word, almost like a craft fair almost approach. Mm-hmm. Getting you know, just gathering horror, scary vendors. Well, you realize that, you know, hey, once you run around the exhibition room for a few minutes, that, you know, there needs to be other stuff. So we started doing this last year, and, you know, the panels were not tremendously well attended, but neither was the whole show because of the traffic and the...
Yeah.
And everything situation, but everybody, all our feedback was that was great. That was the best part, was the programming.
Yeah.
So this year we went full on in. Daily. We got to give a special super shout out to Jessica Rainey, Jay Mazur, and Lisa Vasquez to Scott here for pulling all these filmmakers together, but for pulling all these writers together. I mean, they've been working like this as a second job for them. It's really been amazing. So,
there's the community out there is there. They're passionate. And like I said, just I myself, as someone who just has such an appreciation for independent film and would love to one day create something, this is the place I want to be,
yeah.
You know, because this is the place you can go to learn all this stuff.
You can learn how to write and film and direct, and we'll talk about some stuff in the next episode about the stuff that's tagging on to the side, yeah. The stuff that's happening in the room next door. Want to give a special shout out. We've got a couple of sponsors this year. They're doing a lot of stuff behind the scenes. Fortress Beer Works. That's Jay Mazur's brewery out in Spring. Been out there. They've got their beer is amazing. They've got a nice little spot where, but it's not even little. It's a nice big spot where it's just like relaxing, you know, Saturday, Sunday afternoons. Great music, great beer, great atmosphere. And they are providing a bunch of swag and actually beer coupons for our patrons. So they can come out and get free beer, basically.
Yeah,
you have to take the coupon back out to the brewery. But hey, this is how Texas beer laws work. So it is what it is. Next, I want to give a shout out to my brother Chris at HC Universal. He's the one that designed our primary flyers. Been getting some of our people interviews on podcasts, been just doing a whole lot of stuff. He's not going to be able to make it to the show, but his wife Amy's going to come in, and I'll be talking about her next week. But she's actually doing a panel, and they, as representatives of HC, are going to be recording the show, basically doing on-the-spot interview with panelists, exhibitors, and patrons for us while we're running the show. So they're coming in and basically being our media backup. So that is a service that's completely invaluable, and they do this sort of stuff freelance. So if you're gonna run an event, if you're doing a movie screening, if you've got a book release, if anything like that, especially if you're in the Austin area, because that's where they live, but they travel where they need to go, for live podcasts, audio, video, any kind of essentially media setups, they'll do it for you. So once again, that is HC Universal. You can find their Fortress and HC. You can find them both on our website at scarydadcon.com. I recommend them both highly. And before we close out, once again, I just want to give a shout out to our Flash Fiction contest. We had a Flash Fiction contest. And the rules were it had to be in by a certain date, and it had to be 750 words maximum. No more than 750. 751 got you disqualified. And we had probably 20 entries, and those will be posting. Actually, they just posted on the website this last week. So you can go to the website and read all of those entries. And
the winners will be performing their stories at the open mic.
Yep. They've got Clancy Weeks, Veronica Devereaux, and JT Morse in the third, second, and first position. Won the contest, and they will be performing their stories live. So that is about it for today. I've got to pull a schedule together and regroup so we can tell you. I mean, this was just us announcing the stuff that's going on, and it's a whole Scary Dead show. So I've actually got to pull some sheets, and we'll talk, and it's going to be a whole other one next week about talking about the other half of the event. So until next time, keep it scary.
Later.